We are thrilled to have with us for the first time in the Industrials Conference, 3M, a relatively new stock of ours in our coverage universe that some of you may or may not remember. We put out a report a few months back. Very excited about this stock, and the company has really, over the last couple of quarters, executed quite well. So we are thrilled to have George, who is Chairman and CEO, and Pat Campbell, the CFO, and Matt Ginter from Investor Relations here with us. And we welcome your questions. As usual, I will try to open up the microphone to everybody and anybody. Just please wait till the microphone gets to you before you ask your question, since we are being webcasted. So with that, I want to get to kind of the key question for you, George. I think the key question I'm going to ask all my companies the past couple of days is that we've certainly had a rocky summer as far as the credit crunch is concerned. Have you seen any impact on your business? Is there any concerns that your customers are starting to talk about or anything out there that might give us some indication of whether this is just an isolated credit crunch or whether this is going to spread to the industrial world?
Well, things have remained pretty much the same as they have been all. Things haven't really improved in the construction area. We see our roofing granules business remains about the same. It's kind of flat now. We're not seeing any uptick, I might say. We've seen, for most of the year, softness in electronics. Not so much the LCD TVs, but we've seen it in the some of the consumer electronics areas and the industrial electronics areas. So not things haven't gotten worse, but better. I think would be the short answer to the question.
Well, I would say over the last two quarters, things have certainly progressed nicely for your folks. I think last quarter, organic volumes were up 7%. That's the best in a couple of years. Margins were up 90 basis points. Beat our expectations by quite some measure. I mean, can you give us a little indication of where, you're having a great year, but where you still need to improve, where you think you're really excelling right now, but what are the continued areas that you think you need to show some results in the next few quarters?
Well, I think you know quite well that the real mission is how can we really drive growth faster than it has been in the past, historically. And if you'll allow me just for a minute and give you a perspective, you hear a lot of companies talk about growth, and they think if they seemingly if they talk about it, it's going to happen, that the mission that it's going to unfold for them. But the practical reality is a little different. If you have a company like 3M or a company like many other multinational, multi-industry companies, and they represent a sufficiently broad piece of the market, the first question to ask is, why would you expect them to grow faster than the market? And I remember being asked one time by someone, I won't go into where it was and what it was about, but having a discussion with me about the issues of growth. And this particular person said to me, well, the reason that we think we can grow faster and we don't have to give up price, let's say, is because we have very large market shares. And I remember asking the question, well, if you have an 80% market share and the market grows at 3%, why would you expect it to grow at 6? And so some of the fundamentals that people miss is this is very difficult to get companies to grow at even fractions higher than the market. So what we have done is try to put together a very systematic way of increasing the markets where we are, pointing at markets that have higher growth, penetrating markets, because in virtually all the markets in reality, with the exception of a few, we have very small market shares. So we have great opportunity. So we are systematically executing. I think that's really what has changed. When you come to a company and you try to alter the way it does business and the way it thinks about things like growth, it takes time. I will tell you, it's a lot easier to count the money than it is to make the money. So that's really what's been very different, I think, for 3M. And if you look at our portfolio, it is of course, because it represents the economy, there are pieces that will expand and pieces that will contract at any one moment in time. But the balance of risk is relatively low. And And as a consequence of that, I mean, the real thing that we have to do that Pat and I focus on mostly is just solid, we know what the plan is, we know how to do it, solid execution, and that's so far. We are not immune to external influences. We are going to see that kind of stuff from time to time.
One of the complaints I hear when I go around talking to investors about 3M is that your revenue base and your asset base is highly dislocated. Revenues, 61% or so overseas, but your asset base is flipped to the other direction. It's more 65% or so in the U.S. What can you do, or how long is it going to take to resize that?
Well, it is a great point. The number's actually even a little worse than what you just said. More distorted. And you see it in the way as we are growing now. You know, the United States is growing more slowly, really for everyone, and overseas is growing faster. And these very, very long supply chains that we have as a consequence, because of our history and because of the fact we have so many manufacturing assets in the U.S., our supply chains get very, very long. So our order to cash cycle is very long. As a consequence, our usage of working capital is larger than we would like. So you have to alter that structurally. And the way you do that is you have to put the manufacturing assets where the demand is. Maybe not exactly where the demand is, but the way that we think about it is if you kind of think of a market, and of course it's not just a country market, we have multiple markets within that country. But just conceptually, if you think about a market, and you know the service requirements for that market, whether it's automotive, whether it's retail, whether it's distribution, and you can sort of draw a contour, shall we say, service level contour, 1 day service, 2 day service, 3 day service, 1 week service, around those markets. And if you then think about within that contour, where are the low labor costs and where are the low taxes, because that's another issue that 3M has, that's where your manufacturing gets located. Now that's a great concept, but the practical reality is you don't always know. It's a line I've used many times is forecasting is very difficult, especially when it concerns the future. There's been an awful lot of people that forecast well about the past. And so...
you keep picking on us, folks.
it is what it is. So what you have to do is anticipate more or less where those things get done. And for us, what we've been doing in the last 2 years is what I call oil the squeaky wheel. There was lots of shortages of capacity, chronic shortages of capacity, that we've now solved or we're well on the way to solving. So we're at least positioned in those markets. Not only have the assets moved out of the U.S. into those markets, we do have the capacity to respond to growth as and when we generate it. But we're moving to a sort of a regional hub type structure in low-tax locations, low-cost locations, that will service broad markets. It's places like Singapore, it's places like some parts of the Middle East that have low tax, and other places as well. So that's kind of the way we're thinking about it, and you have to physically build the assets. It isn't, you know, I can't come to a conference and just say, this is what we're going to do. There are people out there, we have to locate, we have to find land, we have to build plants, spec them out, get ready. And this takes years, that's the truth, Scott. So restructuring this footprint, this manufacturing footprint, will take us about, probably, it'll never really be finished, because if growth continues, we'll always be doing it. But if we could notionally draw some kind of end of the program, I think we can get 80% of this done in less than 5 years, and a lot of it done in 3 or 4. So to make significant difference. Of course, what happens is you get, not only do you get the benefit of the low tax, you get the benefit of the close service, the fill rates, so that itself will drive growth. You get the benefit of taxes, you get the benefit of the fallout of the on-costs, all the kind of entropy costs that exist in an organization. And it's actually a very straightforward thing to do, but it's a lot of work to get it done.
Pat, on the issue of tax rates, for a company with 60% of its revenues outside of the U.S., your tax rate is at least 500 basis points higher than most of the rest of the companies that we cover. Besides the kind of obvious stuff that George is talking about in relocating production facilities, is there anything else that you can do to tax plan maybe a little bit more effectively and start to take your rate down closer to peers?
Well, Scott, the ultimate solution is exactly what George talked about. We have to get our assets deployed in different parts of the world where there's a a more tax advantageous structure. We continue to work on all the normal, you know, tax planning type items that you can do with the structure we've got. As I think about it, though, it's a sizable upside opportunity for the company. It's one of the few cases where being on the high side is good going forward, as compared to starting at the bottom. So, you know, we've got great margins. We can be better. Part of that's going to be through taxes. George and I have a kind of an internal objective to get about a point per year out. We have to see how well that lines up with the timing of moving some of our assets to see how well we can execute to that plan. But it's definitely upside from a valuation perspective.
Right. And the distinction in it, Scott, because you have to have the assets. There's a dead time, a dead band. So you get the assets in place before you reap those rewards. So this thing sort of financially has some stiction, shall we call it. You push and push and push, you make the investments before sometime later you reap the rewards. So there is a dead band before you see these things go up.
Right. Let's open it up to the audience now and just raise your hands. Don't all rush at once. Betsy?
Is Santa going to deliver a lot of LCDs this Christmas?
I buy my crystal balls at the same place that you do and pay about the same amount of money. I don't think that Santa has cancelled Christmas or any of the other holidays that take place at that time of the year. I think the question will be where will Santa point the sales? Will he point them at the high end or will he point them at the low end? Now, in a market like the one that we have right now, you know, people are very conscious of the money they're spending. But I don't think Santa's cancelled Christmas. And I think there'll probably be a fair split between the top end and the bottom end.
If you go back, George, one of the other pushbacks I get on your stock sometimes is that people say, well, you're too reliant on LCD as a growth engine and there's not enough other things in the pipeline to take the next step. Now, once upon a time, you used to talk about RFID a fair amount and nanotechnology and other things. Is there anything, can you give us some examples of maybe some products over the next 5 years that could start to take the place of maybe maturing growth in LCD or challenges you may have down the road?
In fact, oddly enough, if you break down the valuation of 3M, what you find consistently is that the base of the company has steadily increased. And the valuation of these transient items, whether they're a pharmaceutical drug, whether it's a magnetic tape, whether it's a new method of printing documents, whether it's LCD TVs, they tend to sort of blossom and fall and haven't really been responsible for the overall underlying strength of growth in 3M. And while it may seem ever so boring, you know, the standard core of 3M, whether it's abrasives, adhesives, tapes, films, all the things that that we use in our daily lives and manufacturers use in their daily lives, they're the things, they're the real value items of 3M. Let me give you just one example of how we've worked at particular businesses. Let's take our abrasives business. Now, this is the oldest business of 3M. This is a business that's existed for 100 years. Now, what can you see new in a business that's existed for 100 years? Very good question. And up until about 4 or 5 years ago, you really didn't see a great deal of new things in our braces business. But we went back to the fundamentals and, you know, I can understand this is not gripping stuff for you, but it's actually gripping stuff for us. We changed the way that the shape of the granules, we changed the way we put them down on a backing, and it completely transforms that business. So that business, you know, just a few years ago that was just in double-digit margins with teens, ROICs, is now, you know, it's got a 2 in front of it. I won't go any further than that. And its return on invested capital is 42%. So it isn't all about glamour. Always come with gold and, you know, flashing lights and dance music with it. It's about doing what growth comes from, the best results, the fastest results, and the lowest risk from come from redoing and expanding and drilling down in the areas that you're good at. Now, it doesn't mean that we're not prepared to take and not happy to take those other brilliant inspirations that you see. And by the way, they are in our pipeline coming out. And you will see some of those in the audience who are coming to our investor meeting, you will see some of those. We've decided we're going to lift the cover a little bit. There'll be one or two places we'll be a bit reluctant to lift the cover, but we're going to show you those things. And these are in the transformational things, using science to make brand new products from seemingly old things. That's where the real strength of 3M lies, in addition to that creative genius that the company has as well.
Got a question from the audience? In the middle back, please.
George, have you significantly changed the incentive structure for the sales force in the last year or so?
Yes, we have. There's the incentive sales structure has changed in a number of different ways, and it changed somewhat differently in different markets, I must confess. So there's greater incentives to drive growth, and even in the leadership, we've altered that significantly now. This sounds perhaps negative, but the way we were formally incentive our incentive compensation, it was all about last year's results. And so we could have a target of, say, 12% EPS growth, but get only 6, and so miss the plan, but our people would get 6% more incentive compensation. We put that in a box and deep sixed it. And what we've done now is all of our incentive compensation, whatever it is based off plan. So it's based off an external view of the company, obviously by Wall Street. And so our judgment now is against how we do against plan, not how we necessarily do against last year. And we think that's much more aligned with our shareholders and the way they view the world is now the way we view the world.
If I could just add on the sales force, I think two things have changed over the years. Part of that happened, before George joined the company. We've gone to a more of a risk-based approach. There's more at-risk compensation for our sales force. And we've also incentivized sales force to sell other divisions' products as well, as compared to maybe just their own. So we've incentivized our sales force to try to sell more of what's good for 3M, not just their own division or their own product group.
Next question.
Say again, please.
Sir, would you or have you considered using sort of building internationally to achieve the goals you talked about?
Yes, we have, and in fact, we've done quite a few of those. This year, ones that come immediately to mind this year are a small company in Chile, small company in India, one we just closed in Thailand, a couple we did last year, actually one just recently in the UK on passports, another one we bought last year on passports. So we actually see that as a very important part of our strategy, and it's for several different reasons. Firstly, in particular in developing markets, you sometimes need something that's either a market entry product or a brand which is familiar in that marketplace. Most of us tend to jump to the conclusions that the things that we know that other people know. Yet, I'm born in Britain. Go to a stationery store in Britain and ask for some Scotch tape. There's a 50-50 chance anybody will know what you're speaking about. Brand there is Sellotape. It's a small brand, but nevertheless, it's the brand that people know. So what we've been trying to do is by facilitating brands to penetrate distribution, and then sort of use a sort of locomotive or train kind of thought that we tag our global brands on the back of the brand that we bought to penetrate local markets. That we've done in a number of different cases internationally. In other cases, we have bought some of those companies, sometimes international, sometimes not, because they had a key competency we didn't have. For example, the passport manufacturing company that we bought in the UK. It's been just a fabulous point of entry for sales into the US, into Australia, into other countries. And so, yes, that piece of the puzzle is very, very important. But it's not just about volume. It really is about getting targeted assets with competencies that we don't have or access to markets that we don't have to facilitate our growth.
Historically, one or two things. You go for margins or you could go for growth. And, you know, coming in from the outside, you know, what gives you the confidence now that you can sustain both? And there's also been a concern that the cultural mindset of the people there wasn't cohesive to doing both.
Well, it's it is actually a super question. If you go back to prior to 1990, the sales CAGR of the company was 12% and had been, and that, by the way, that's a number over about 35 years. That isn't sort of a two-year window or a five-year window or a 10-year window. It was a very long-term trend for the company. Come the 1990s, we began to get into the kind of sort of position that you spoke about. Growth rates dropped down to 2%, and even in the last 5 years, we're only at about 3. And now, what we did do is we took a lot of waste off the table and drove margins. But I think what we've been trying to do, and I think so far have proven that we can do it successfully, is to grow but not necessarily sacrifice margins. You know, our public position is trying to contain margins in this 22 to 23% operating profit regime. We've been able to do that quite successfully. Take some of the additional money that we have had and use that to fund growth. I think we've done that quite effectively. For the moment, at least judged by the last couple of years, we've moved our growth rates up by a couple of points by so doing without necessarily sending the margins down the toilet. So it seems to me that we seem to have found our way with this particular balance. The key thing is you must not turn your back on the top of the pyramid, because if you turn your back on the top of the pyramid and imagine that you can only grow by going to the B tier rather than just the A tier, then that's going to be a problem for you. And you've got to be very, very careful how you manage both the value laddering and the price laddering in a marketplace. Oddly enough, and a lot of investors have asked us about this, well, you know, are you really coded for that, George? And I said, we do it all the time in places like Scotch tape, in post-it notes, in roadway signs. We serve all of the market, and we've done it very, very well, very effectively at making sure we differentiate properly in price, differentiate properly in value. And so really, we're only talking about doing in other places what we do quite naturally in several places, and have built just powerful, enduring franchises in 3M in those areas. We intend to replicate that, but the key has got to be you cannot turn your back on the top and move down, or otherwise it's going to produce the very effect that you're speaking about. Now, in terms of the culture, one of the challenges always for a company like 3M, really any company that's been very, very successful for many years, is how do you keep people hungry. I remember some years ago talking to a man that worked with me, very wealthy, and I was talking about his future, and he said, well, George, you don't have to worry about me, I'm not greedy. I said, no, Fred, my worry is not that you're not greedy, my worry is that you're not hungry. And so that kind of inspiration is that you have to show people the art possible, the art of something better. And in my experience at 3M, I mean, they're skeptical, they're Midwesterners, they're reserved. But once you get them aligned around something like this, they will just, they will run like masses, they really will. And we seem to have got a lot of that going now. Have we got everybody on board? I don't think so. But I'm really pleased with the way we seem to be managing all of these spinning plates, restructuring the supply chain, investing in R&D more, proactively, yet at the same time providing growth and managing margins. It seems to be working, but you know, we'll be able to look back on this in 5 years' time and we'll know whether it's worked as well as we hope.
A question up front, please.
What about an appropriate gearing level for the company? What do you think it is?
Say again, please, dear.
An appropriate gearing level?
An appropriate? Oh, gearing. Oh, this is the lady from Scottish Widows.
Leverage for us, dumb Americans.
I mean, we don't think about gearing in the same way that you do. We don't even use that terminology, which is obviously European. But we don't. The real question that's usually for Pat and myself is, are you wedded to the AA rating? And the answer is no. We are prepared to take on more debt to leverage our balance sheet and use that as a weapon, and have done that, I think, in the past few, I suppose. And there's no reason to believe that we're wedded to that. So yes, if necessary, especially if it came along with a big acquisition. But I will tell you, with the way the economy is right now, probably a lot of people are thinking that, you know, it might be smart to just be a little careful at this moment. With your Scottish values, you ought to understand that.
The question is, let me repeat for the webcast, do you have a range in mind of where you could go to in gearing / leverage?
Well, I think that Pat and I are willing to go one notch down. I think at that point we'd be asking questions. It's getting close to where the optimal capital structure of the company is.
Following up on that, George, I mean, the one positive side effect of this credit crunch, you know, is clearly that the M&A markets have to be coming your way. Have you seen any tangible signs that multiples are coming in, or that there's any kind of panic out there among potential candidates that the private equity bid is gone?
Well, it's obviously it's very early days yet. I think even some of the PE guys are still taking stock of what this all means for them. But we have seen some early indications, yes, of people who are prepared to talk about, not only talk about lower prices, but some of the PE guys, most of the PE guys that have gone from the marketplace. So now it's just strategic. So the number of bidders has fallen. The number of PE people has either been eliminated or severely reduced. And I think in the coming months, we'll probably see some further downward pressure on prices, and especially in the private market. The public market, I think, is a different matter. But in the private market, yes, I think we'll see some further softening of prices, which is good for us. Pat, you want to add anything?
I guess the only thing I was going to add there, Scott, is I think the unknown part is what's going to come to market now. When the PE guys were out there, I'm sure there were a lot of people looking at the multiples and said, so let's jump in. I think people are going to try to assess their position. Some people may have to make a move, which I think we're in an ideal situation to respond to, but I think you may have some people sitting on the sidelines to see how this thing plays out.
The corner, please. Doug.
When you get through this 3 or 5 year restructuring plan, what do you see the financial metrics looking like as far as top line growth, working capital requirements, the balance sheet? What are the long-term financial objectives?
I think we've said much of it. We don't see margins moving from where they are today. We see premium returns, so north of 20% premiums. But we see the growth rate moving up somewhere closer to 8% in organic, but in total with acquisitions and other investments, probably longer term, up around the 10% number. Now, that is a monumental task to do that. So let's not in any way think it's a conversation about numbers here. It requires just absolutely relentless focus on operations, on innovation, on the balance sheet, and so this is a tough task for us to pull off, but it appears to be a doable task, as Pat and I look at the planning forecasting inside the company, it appears to be a doable deal, but it will require relentless execution of, in particular, the chain restructuring. Now, you want to jump in there?
No, I think that's fair. If we can get to a combination of a top line that starts to approach a double-digit number, and as George mentioned, we're perfectly satisfied with our operating margins, but we're not satisfied with our after-tax margins. So our after-tax margin should actually improve during this this time period. So if we can keep operating margins about flat, improve on the below line return basis, get the top line growing, then we can give you top line double digit, bottom line EPS type double digit consistent growth. So that's what we're striving for.
And specific network and capital requirements, and what about the tax rate? Is 500 basis point reduction, is that an acceptable bogey?
Well, I think it's an acceptable first level objective for us to get. Then once we get there, we'll have to reassess and see where do we go from there. Because even at that, we still will not be best in class from a definition standpoint of a number of industrial companies. So I think we have to look at it from there. But we thought that was a fair objective to set from where we're starting at. On the working capital, we're going to have to work our way through the supply chain system and then assess where we're at there. But we're absolutely convinced that there is hundreds of millions of dollars, okay, plus of working capital that we can free up once we get the supply chain sorted out.
Pat Egan. Oops, I'm sorry. There's a microphone right there. That's your next.
You had mentioned that you've restructured the incentive plan for the sales force, and I wondered what the turnover experience has been since you implemented that plan.
There's been nothing negative. 3M always has been and will remain so an absolutely premium employer. This is the kind of company that people want to come and work for. So we've had, there's been no real loss. I mean, there's been some, and we've done that actively, but there hasn't been the voluntary quits that I think really is the question you're asking about.
Okay. I'm just curious about...
We can hear you.
The linkage between your organic growth and global GDP. I mean, we've had the most synchronized global expansion in my career for the last several years. Far East, Europe, North America. So what's the global GDP growth context that you use to get to your organic target, and how do you linkage?
We really focus more on IPI, as we're a manufacturing company rather than GDP. And sometimes they're close, but the target that we have internally is to grow at twice IPI in each of the markets in which we participate. Now that requires us obviously to, in order to sort of do that, we have to have the products, we have to have the presence in the markets, we have to, as I've said earlier, point our resources at markets that are naturally growing a little faster. This is healthcare, this is infrastructure building, mining, minerals extraction, energy, and this is where we're pointing increasingly more and more resources at. And in fact, in the planning that we've been doing, by doing just what we have said, it appears that it gives us a couple of points additional growth in the underlying markets as we are planning to go forward. So it appears to all hang together.
I think we have time for one more question. Maybe I'll ask it. What are your biggest concerns right now, George? Clearly there's a lot going out on the macro side. It's a little uncertain, but what else? I mean,
well, if I set the macro issues to one side, it's we have a lot on our plate. We've got a lot to execute operationally. Got a lot to execute, and I mean the good news is that we have it divided. It's the activities in many different countries are not necessarily overburdening one part of our organization, or it's in different businesses. So we seem to have it spread. But in the end, the key now, we think we have a good strategy. We've maintained that strategy. We like it, and it's going to be focusing on just relentless execution.
Okay, great. With that, we're going to wrap it up. start up with Northrop Grumman in 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.